Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Hello and welcome everybody. You have tuned in to episode number 234. Of Linux in the Ham Shack. This is our Thursday Weekender edition. This is the Weekender number 12. So welcome into that. And I guess we will just kind of jump right into it since we are the most terrific amateur radio podcast on the internet. And we can say that with some confidence. So this weekend and next weekend in amateur radio, there are some contests and special events going on. So maybe Cheryl can tell us about this weekend's contests.
Alrighty then. The first one is the original QRP contest, 1500 Zulu, July 7th to 1500 Zulu, July 8th. The contest idea is to promote creative or unconventional QRP hamming, like homebrewing or just doing it without your usual luxurious QRO equipment. And the second one is the Marconi Memorial HF Contest, 1400 Zulu, July 7th to 1400 Zulu, July 8th. The aim of the Marconi Memorial HF Contest is to commemorate the second century of radio and its father, Guglielmo Marconi. It's a worldwide competition. Everyone can work everybody, only CW.
I think that's like Guglielmo or something like that, which is Italian for Peter, if I'm not mistaken. So.
Yeah, so since Bill just went to Italy, any clue?
Yeah, he learned Italian in the week he was there.
Yeah.
Ciao, Bella.
which translates to where's the wine and cheese?
Exactly. Vino a formaggio.
Yeah, there you go.
Por favore. Pronto.
In which case they just point in every direction
because
yeah, exactly.
All right, so next weekend we have the IARU, I said that right? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Yep. HF World Championship from 1200 Zulu on the 14th to 1200 Zulu on the 15th. The objective of this particular contest is to contact as many other amateurs, especially IARU member society HQ stations around the world, using 160, 80, 40, 20, 15, and 10 meters. Note, no work bands. We've established this as kind of a theme among contesters.
It's a given. Yeah, it's a given. So that's also the event that the WRTC 2018 is occurring on. So you'll find those stations there for that contest.
All right, very good. So, Bill, you want to take us through the special events coming up?
Absolutely. Special event stations coming up. We have the 13 Colonies, which is ongoing. It should wrap up here in the next couple days on the July 7th. So if you haven't gotten all your 13 Colonies plus your two extras, I think that's what it takes to do like a clean sweep or whatever. Please get on there and spot and help everybody else to get those 13 Colonies. Of course, that celebrates our independence. And as always, from July 1st to July 7th. The second one is the Whiskey Rebellion Festival, and this is July 3rd, so it's ongoing now through July 15th, 24/7 looks like, and the special event call sign is Whiskey 3 Romeo, and this is in Washington, Pennsylvania, Washington Amateur Communications. Wacom is going to be on 6 meters, 17 meters, 20 meters, and 40 meters. There's a certificate available, and you can check out their website for more information. And of course, we have FIFA World Cup 2018 Russia going on, and that's football, not really soccer, but that's okay. We'll call it soccer because we're in the U.S., and that's still going on through July 15th, and they have a special event call sign that ends in 18 FWC, Fox Whiskey Charlie, and you'll find them on various participating countries. So check that out. You can check out their website as well for more information and any type of special commemoration certificate or whatever.
All right, very good. So a couple of weekends of cool things to do, some special events that you can get certificates for, and some contests you can participate in. And the special events, you can use the work bands. Hey, what do you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So if your radio can do 12, 17, or 30, you're gold. All right. So normally we would have announcements in this section right here, but I didn't have any announcements. Does anybody have anything they want to announce? Is there anybody in the chat room who has something they want to tell everybody? Because now would be a good time. I got nothing.
Let's announce who we have in the chat room. We have a new visitor in the chat room as well.
That's true. We had Mike, KM8YOR, but he had to bail because Bill made us really, really late last night.
Yeah, tonight. It's all Bill's fault.
Mike. Yeah. Sorry. It's not technically Bill's fault, but we'll blame him anyway. We also have Don, KC9ZMY, and we have Ted, WA0EIR, and we have Jim, 7J1AJH. They're the only folks that I'm aware of who are currently active in our chat room right now. So thanks for tuning in on a very late Thursday night and hanging out with us for a little while.
Absolutely.
So moving on, we have our Linux and Ham Shack Ham Radio Challenge, which we issue every 2 weeks on the Weekender. And the one I came up with tonight is participating in your local amateur radio club, whether you're a member or not, especially in an Elmering or initiation role. Get somebody who may be thinking about getting into the hobby, help them out, or help somebody who's already in the hobby in some way. Be an Elmer. That's my challenge to you for the next couple of weeks. And I guess I'm issuing that challenge to myself, too. So we'll see how that goes. All right. So moving on from ham radio type stuff, let's talk about some open source type things. We talk about that here as well. This one is mine. I threw this in here, and it's our distro to try for the next fortnight. And the one I picked
You said Fortnite?
I did say Fortnite, yes.
I got to go log in quick. See ya. Bye.
No, it's NIGHT Fortnite.
Oh, that Fortnite.
Yeah,
that two-week thingy. Okay, okay.
Yes, I'm sorry. I understand the confusion.
trigger alert, trigger alert, trigger words. There we go.
All right. So anyway, this is a distribution that I believe we have mentioned on the show before, and it wouldn't surprise me if we had. However, we have been, you know, doing the show for 10 years, so it's entirely possible. I've talked about it in the past. But there's a new release of PinGuy OS, and I think we had some issue in the past whether we wanted to call it PinGuy or Pingui OS.
I vote for Pingui.
Why do you vote for Pingui?
Penguin.
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
This has got to be before me. It's been a while.
Yes, I believe it was before you. Yeah. So anyway, PinGuy OS or Pingui OS, maybe it's based on where it's actually developed, what country it's developed in. I did not look that information up. So while I'm reading this, someone could be doing that. It's an Ubuntu-based distribution, which offers a customized GNOME desktop environment, which is intended to be easy to use for new Linux users. The project's latest release, based on Ubuntu 18.04 LTS, includes GNOME 3.28. 32-bit support has been dropped in this release, and the changelog mentions several updates. The tweaked GNOME 3.28 interface, of course, new versions of OpenGL and the Mesa libraries. The file manager is the latest version of Nemo, and is based on the 4.15 series kernel. Downgraded was the DRI driver for Exaorg, which fixed a problem with RetroArch, and the Wineback repo is included, so it will be easy to install and run Windows games. It also has XFAT support. Docky has been replaced with SimpleDock and the Places status indicator. Audio levels can now be cranked up to 150%.
Sounds familiar.
And some of the default GNOME apps have been replaced with Mate versions. Gedit has been replaced with Pluma. And it's available, PinGuy or Pingui OS, in full and mini editions. And a link to that distribution will be in the show notes. So where is Pingui from? Do we know?
The UK.
Ah, interesting.
From the UK, yeah. So, yeah, it's considered active. And it looks like it's been active since 2011. So it's probably based on the version 10.04. So that was the very first version they came out with. And we got a comment here from July 4th on DistroWatch that, ouch, very bloated and inefficient. So maybe, you know, just try it on the live DVD side. Don't actually install it.
Or use your VirtualBox powers to install it in a VM.
Yeah,
that
actually worked, yeah.
Yep. All right. So also in the open source universe, we have upcoming events, and there's a big open source convention coming up real soon now, which is O'Reilly OSCON. This is a convention that I used to get to go to, but don't anymore. It's in Portland, Oregon, as it always has been, or at least has been since I knew about it. It's July 16th through the 19th, and open source is the way of the world, they say. From the explosion of AI with frameworks like TensorFlow, MXNet, and PyTorch, to blockchain projects like Hyperledger, Bitcoin, and Ethereum, as well as infrastructure disruptors like Kubernetes, Prometheus, and Istio. Istio. That's a dash there. Open source is the value that fuels new industries and pushes forward long-standing ones. OSCON has been ground zero of the open source movement. In its 20th year, OSCON continues to be the catalyst for innovation and success for companies. Unlike other conferences they cover open source projects across all origins and affiliations. The program focuses solely on projects in areas of innovation. So I wish I could go back to OSCON. Portland is such a cool city.
Yeah, it's one of those conferences I've always wanted to go to, but never went. And when I was looking for these conferences, I was like, oh, damn, it's too soon. It was just like a month out. I might have considered actually going, because Portland's about a 10-hour drive from here, so it's not a bad drive.
Yeah, next year you should definitely go. I got to go to, I think, four, maybe five.
Yeah,
OSCONs. Yeah. It's a fantastic conference, and the Portland Convention Center where they hold it is in.
Well, next July at this time, I will be at the World Jamboree. So,
yeah.
I'm already booked for 2019 in July. So,
well, maybe I'll be at OSCON. So, we'll see how cool. That goes.
Yeah.
All right. So, Cheryl, you want to tell us about the next one?
Well, actually, I was looking up how to pronounce.
Oh, Pingui?
It's Pingui. It says, it's very easy for people to remember, but how should we pronounce it? And they have it down as PIN-GUI. So I'm taking that as Pingui.
Pingui? Yeah. Okay. That's the way I figured it was, but who knows?
Unless you speak a different language, then it could be like Pingui.
Right.
Well, that's what somebody said. I'm French, and it's pronounced Guy. So,
Francophile. All right. So tell us about the next conference that's coming up.
The next one is the Open Source Summit North America. It's August 29th through the 31st in Vancouver, British Columbia. Open Source Summit North America is the leading conference for developers, architects, and other technologists, as well as open source community and industry leaders for collaboration, sharing information, learning about the latest technologies, and gaining a competitive advantage by using innovative open solutions. Over 2,000 will gather for OSS NA in 2018.
So, I don't consider that a big conference.
No, I don't either.
Not like Cisco Networkers. Oversold.
Yeah, exactly. Cisco Networkers, yeah. Or a Hamvention.
Well, and Linux World and Hamvention.
No, Linux World wasn't actually that big.
I thought it was.
Not like Cisco Networkers. Networkers actually takes over whole cities. They don't need convention centers. They actually need metropolitan areas for networkers.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and you went to Cisco Networkers, and there was concerts. And
yeah, Networkers is a fabulous concert, or not concert, conference, which has concerts. To go to if you can. So
yeah, because you saw what, Train?
I saw one year I saw Train and OK Go.
Right.
That was when it was in Las Vegas. And I went once when it was in Florida and they had KISS, which I skipped because I can't stand KISS.
You can't
stand
them, right.
And
you also saw John Cleese.
Yes, John Cleese was at the one in Anaheim. That was incredible. I got to be in the same room with John Cleese. And I don't remember what the concert was for that particular year. I honestly don't remember. So,
yeah, the last Networkers I went to was in 2002 in Orlando, and we had the big speaker was Chuck Yeager was there.
I went to the one in our, my first one was in Orlando, but it was after 2002.
It was like 2007 or.
Oh, okay.
It was something like that. It was whichever one was in Orlando that had Kiss. So I don't know if they go to that one. Yeah.
I was out of the ISP business at that point. I had my fill.
2007.
It was 2007. Okay. There you go. So I don't remember. I didn't go to Cisco Networkers like consecutively. I think I went every other year. So it was probably like 2007, 2009, and 2011 or something
like that. Lines, yeah.
So. I was into PitCon after that. So, which was the Pittsburgh conference for analytical laboratories.
Oh, that sounds incredibly geeky.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very geeky. Yeah.
Like Lisa isn't geeky.
Well, Lisa is pretty geeky, yes.
Yeah, and you've been to most of those since 2000.
Yes. Now they've changed format, though, so I might be able to get back to that one this year. I still haven't really pressed on that.
I didn't think you wanted to go.
I wouldn't mind going. It's 3 days and it's in Nashville, so it's an easy drive.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. Hey, let's talk about this open source challenge. It's like my favorite place.
Yeah, this one's because of Bill, and because we had a return to GitHub dumpster diving in our last episode, I figured we should make our, well, not make anybody, but suggest that our listeners, if they want a challenge, go root around in GitHub and see what's out there. Find a project that might be useful to you in the open source world. GitHub is a great place to find those projects and new and upstart type people who are developing really cool things, and you can find a lot of stuff that doesn't build or work. So,
absolutely.
So, you definitely want to check out the GitHub.
And but don't look at my repositories because I have none.
Okay. I have none either. I have no repos on GitHub. All right. So we're out of like the geeky technical stuff. So now we're just going to move. We're going to like lay back, kick the seats back and, take a deep breath and prepare ourselves for the weekend by talking about things of leisure like food and alcohol and other fun things. And okay, we'll kick that off with Cheryl telling us about what's on the menu.
All right. So on the menu tonight are Baja fish tacos. Russ and I actually had these last Friday. We had some friends over for dinner, along with some elote and stuffed jalapenos. Even those at the table that are not fans of coleslaw and actually refuse to try it.
Like me, I have my hand up.
Yeah, you had your hand up.
I'm not a fan of coleslaw, but I was a fan of this one.
Yeah, they raved about this version. And I think Russ has officially bumped this into the top 10 meals for the house. Is that correct? Yes or no?
It's right up there, yes.
Yeah, okay. Yep. So for the tacos, there's a Baja fish taco sauce, a citrus coleslaw, and the tacos themselves. For the taco sauce, you need some mayo, sour cream, garlic, lime juice, cayenne pepper, and salt. For the citrus coleslaw, you need orange juice, lime juice, salt, pepper, honey, olive oil. Dogs. Yeah, barking dogs in the background.
That is mandatory.
We're hungry for some coleslaw.
Right. Yeah. Olive oil and sliced or shredded cabbage. The recipe actually called for buying a head of cabbage and shredding it. I bought the pre-done stuff in the bag from Walmart and some cilantro. And for the tacos, you need some...
It's a nice sort of backdrop to this.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm about... Do you have a water bottle in here?
Probably.
Hang on. Just chuck a beer at them.
This is a beer free zone. You know that. We don't. Oh, there's water bottles up over there. Hang on.
Don't want you to throw anything flammable at them. Come on, jeez.
Yeah, don't throw whiskey or anything important at them. They quit.
Not a good
idea.
They
stopped so good.
Yeah, so do you want me to reread that?
No.
All right.
No, just go for it.
So now they're in here barking.
Go. Okay, go.
All right. So anyway, for the tacos, we need some cod cut into bite-sized chunks, salt, black pepper, cayenne pepper, cumin, coriander, garlic, flour, some beer, some vegetable oil to fry all that goodness up in, and some corn or flour tortillas. We actually used flour tortillas, the fajita size, because we're not big fans of corn tortillas.
By the way, there are two fajita-sized tortillas, and we had the bigger ones. We had like the jumbo tortilla size. They actually have a smaller tortilla size. I noticed at the store when I was buying.
Oh, did they? Yeah. Okay. Oops. Sorry.
So we had the tortilla fajita grande is what they were called.
No,
so,
I don't think that's what I originally bought.
No, it is what it you is? Originally okay. bought. Okay. All right. Because the little ones were in a much bigger package. There was actually like 20 or 30 of them in the package. So. Can all right. Hang on.
Water we'll bottle, yours. Please.
Russ is going to go kick some dog ass.
He's everybody's about to get a bath. Yep, one just got a bath as she walked through the office. We have, you walk into our house and, people I'm sure are like, why do they have like 18 spray bottles lined up on their kitchen counter? It's because that's the only way to shut them or the cat up.
Get off the couch,
spray him with a water bottle. Stop barking, spray him with a water bottle. So the cat anymore is just like, I am 16 years old. I have done that stuff for the last 16 years. I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm just going to sit here and watch you guys be idiots.
That's like entertainment now.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely entertainment for the cat.
You guys are so stupid.
Yeah.
Here it comes. Oh my god.
Oops, here it comes. I'm gonna sit back and watch.
Yeah, the dogs don't like to get sprayed either, Don. That's the same thing. They don't like
Yeah, no, dogs do not like getting sprayed in the face with water. So
yeah, we used to have those too, but my daughter would steal the damn bottles and want to play with them like little squirt guns. So we could never keep a bottle. It's like, where did the bottle go? And the dog's like in the kitchen again.
Yeah.
I don't know, Daddy.
Crisis,
probably in the backyard.
Yeah. There were three water bottles on Russ's desk. There's like five on the kitchen cabinet. There's a couple in the living room, a couple in my office, a couple in the bedroom. Yeah, we've got them everywhere. So 98 cents at Walmart. I buy like 10 at a time. So.
All right.
Okay, we were talking about these delicious tacos. Yeah.
So anyway.
Except for I wouldn't fry them. I would probably
grill them.
Probably do some kind of grill. Yeah. I don't like fried.
Right.
Stuff.
After we did, I was like, I bet these would be really good grilled. So.
Like a nice blackened seasoning or something like that. Get it like spiced up a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, just mix everything together. Obviously, the recipe will be in the show notes. And, it's pretty much an assemble while you do it, because you don't want the coleslaw to get your tortilla soggy. But, yes, it was very tasty. So,
yes, I enjoyed them greatly. Awesome. And everyone who was here to enjoy them greatly.
Yes, even the ones that didn't like coleslaw, which I think was everybody at the table.
I have to say that beer batter, even though, you don't have to do them fried. The beer batter fried fish was quite good.
Yes, it was.
Oh, yeah. Cod is always good fried. I mean, I'm just a fan of not frying.
Well, we don't.
My stomach thanks me later.
No, and that's exactly it. We don't do much fried, but
once in a while.
Yeah, every once in a while, we do fry something. So.
Yeah, we really don't fry things. And the thing is, most of the things we fry have something to do with Mexican food. Like when you make tostadas, you'll fry a tortilla.
Tortillas, right.
Or something like that. Yeah. But I mean, as a general rule, we don't really fry anything. Even the things that would normally be fried, like
French fries.
Like French fries or onion rings or, when you made the fried zucchini and stuff like that, it was all done as a baking thing. Yeah. So there you go. You don't have to fry, you can bake.
That's true.
All right. Well, very good. That was Cheryl's Recipe Corner, and we'll move on to my drink corner for tonight. And tonight we're going to talk about one of the new scotches that the barking dogs got me for Father's Day. And this one is called Aberfeldy 12. It's a 12-year-old single malt scotch, obviously. It's bottled at 40%, which is 80 proof. It's a Highland scotch. And its color is gold. It's a sort of gold, lightly caramely yellow. There was some discussion, I think, whether this was colored and or chill filtered. I believe we think it is both, but we're not sure entirely. So.
No, I thought we figured out it wasn't, or that was the other one.
I think that was one of the other ones. Gotcha. Yeah, we've been sampling many scotches today. I decided to do this one. One thing to note about this particular scotch is that it's one of the major components that makes up Dewar's White Label, which is a blended scotch and a major factor in its production is Aberfeldy 12. So if you're from
Doers, like regular
yeah,
Doers,
yeah, it's correct. A same company. So, yeah.
Oh, okay.
This is one of the components that makes up the blend that is called Doers White Label. So the nose on it is actually a fair bit more interesting than the taste. We read lots of other people's description of the nose, and we each took turns nosing it ourselves, and we kind of came up with a composite of the two. And what we came up with is a very light, sort of indistinct, or not something you could pick out specifically, but a light spice, a honey sweetness, a little toffee, unbaked bread. Basically the smell you get when you have the flour and you've kneaded the dough and everything and you're letting it proof that. A little bit of pear, which I actually didn't really get until it had a little bit of water in it and opened up a bit in the glass. But there is definitely some pear in there. There's a little bit of pineapple, some green apple, and then cereal grain. So that's all on the nose. So fairly complex on the nose, which is nice. The taste left a little something to be desired, quite frankly. It smells a lot better than it tastes.
So smell it and pour it out.
Yeah, you could do that, I suppose. If you wanted to enjoy your scotch and not get drunk, you could do that.
Oh, it smells great. Pour it.
Yeah. At $40 a bottle, right? You might want to just drink it. You can mix it with something, I suppose, if you really wanted to. They mix it in Doers, so there you go.
That's probably a reason why.
Maybe so, yeah.
It is chill filtered and it does have coloring added.
Yes, that's what I figured. I figured it was. But the taste on it we got was dry grain, you know, like a dry rye taste or any kind of sort of dry barley type grain. Sweet spice, again, indistinct. You can't pick out a particular herbal note, but there are herbal notes. The apple is pretty prominent, some honey, dry toast. And to me, I had the distinct impression of an aftertaste of almond roca. And that was really pronounced. And only at the very, very end, after it had been sitting on my tongue for a while. And then it just kind of had this flavor of almond roca. So,
except you had no clue that the name of the candy was almond roca.
Right. We came back around to it. We figured it out. But anyway, that's what I got. So the price on this is actually pretty reasonable. A 750 milliliter bottle will run you about $38.
Sorry.
Will run you about $38. So it's relatively inexpensive. It is by far not the best single malt scotch in the world. It's fairly highly rated out there. If you look at most places, it's rated at least about a 4 out of 5. So, I mean, it's not terrible. I'm going to give it a rating on my 100-point scale of an 85, which for the things that I've tried is sort of bottom middle of the range. So it's not terrible, and it's certainly not expensive, but you can do better in both regards.
I don't know. If we logarithmically looked at your range, you know, the bottom is like 80.
Yeah, that's very true.
That's true.
And I don't think anything's falling below like 82, 81 or something like that. I mean, I want to know, like, what is a really bad scotch? And that's a challenge for you the next time.
Find a really bad one.
Is I want you to find something that you really hate.
Have you had anything? Well, there's a couple in there that you said that you're not a big fan of.
Well, there's some things that I am not a big fan of. But the thing about it is, it's like, if it's put in a bottle and you can taste it without vomiting, it's pretty much getting an 80.
Okay, well, find one that you vomit and we'll call it good. I want to prove there's like a little legitimacy to this whole process, because I'm calling bullcrap.
Usually that
on
stuff
this.
Doesn't
like,
get bottled.
Everything's 80 plus. It's like all B plus. It's
well, that's
like,
the thing. I think that's so. The point, though. If it's less than a B plus, it doesn't get put in a bottle and sold in stores.
It doesn't get put in a bottle. Okay, I could probably go with that. It's kind of hard to tell the bottom, though. Like, what is the real bottom?
I think it would have to be, from all the other reviewers I've seen, and I model my reviews on other people's reviews, I think this is the way it kind of works. But there are some really, really terrible scotches out there. Actually, there's one I can review. The problem is it's a blended scotch. It's not a single malt. But I know it's terrible. I know it's awful, and I hate it. So I could actually rate it and give it a rating.
Oh, okay. So we can have like a base level bottom. Like, what is the bottom?
The worst scotch that I can think of right off the top of my head is one that everybody has seen on the store shelves if they've ever gone to buy scotch.
Ewers?
It's J&B Rare.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, and everybody has seen it. It's everywhere, and it is absolutely horrid.
Love it.
That green bottle, yellow label.
Yeah, right, yeah. With the red letters.
Yep. Yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. Yeah.
So maybe next time I'll review J&B Rare. So,
because you have to have a bottle.
No,
no, I do. I do have a bottle. Yep.
Where in the world is that? Yeah.
I think it came from the auction. So if it hasn't been used, because I would only use it as a mixer, because I mean you couldn't really drink it as anything else. But right. If I still have any of that left, I will definitely review it.
Okay, that'd be great.
So there you go. Yeah, so we can have our baseline. Like, what is the lowest rating a scotch will ever get?
What is what is the bottom?
What's
of the barrel?
Lowest That's rating really, of a scotch that hasn't been urinated in? That's what we're looking for.
Are you sure? Maybe it has.
Yeah, are
been.
You sure that one hasn't been? Right. Yeah. That's what makes it so tangy.
It gives it that twang, you know.
All right. So anyway, Aberfeldy 12 gets an 85, and we'll explore the depths of depravity in the next episode. All right. There so Bill, tell us what you were drinking tonight.
So I am drinking just crappy stuff that my wife likes. It's she actually bought a bottle for our very helpful employees at the co-op, but I thankfully drank it all tonight at the bookstore. Because, well,
you needed something to drink. There you go.
It was, the air conditioning hasn't worked since May, and now it's really getting hot. Even though I mentioned snow the other day in our podcast, it's hot. Tomorrow it's going to be 99 degrees, if not 100 degrees in Billings. And our little bookstore doesn't have air conditioning because apparently the building owner is a complete incompetent on hiring AC repairmen.
Hey.
So anyway, this is the New Age White. And I am not a white wine fan. It is, it's very sweet. It's very white. My whole rule with whites is that, the grapes haven't ripened enough to turn it to a red wine where it actually tastes like wine. So, but like this one is, I would almost say it would be a sweet Prosecco if I were to describe it, except for it's not quite as carbonated as a Prosecco, but there is a little carbonation in it. It's a 9% ABV, so it's really low, and this is probably because most of the sugar hasn't turned into alcohol yet, so that's what gives it a really sweet flavor. It's a blend of 90% Torontes and 10% Sauvignon Blanc. It is very sweet. From wine.com, they say the acidity levels, the acidity leads to soft, semi-sweet, and slightly effervescent flavors and a mouthfeel. It is extremely refreshing, vivacious, and sensual wine. I don't know if I would go that far. It should be served well chilled as an aperitif or dessert wine. I agree with that. The colder, the better. It also tastes great with spicy Thai, Indian, Chinese. Yeah, anything spicy that you want something a little sweet with, but you want to get a little alcohol. It's not bad, but I would put it at on my wine scale of liking, of like quality wines, it would be pretty much close to the bottom, like along with your ice wines and stuff like that. I do not like my wines to be sweet, but if you like sweet wines, hey, this one's great, and it's generally pretty cheap. I think we get it for probably like $8 a bottle. So you can probably find it pretty cheap everywhere else. You can find it even in gas stations and stuff like that. It's not the best wine in the world. So, you're not gonna, look at your fancy wine shop for this. This will be at like World Market and, Cost Plus or whatever you want to call it, in your local area. But, it's not bad, and it is quite refreshing, being sweet. I don't like pops or anything else like that. So I don't like, or sodas, depending upon the, area of the world you live in, whether they're sodas or pops. I don't like sweet drinks that much. And this is like just sweet enough that it's almost palatable. It's pretty good. I have finished a bottle today, and I have another glass in front of me because we have a open bottle here at the house because, of course, my wife likes it. And I figured, ah, what the heck, you know, no sense throwing good wine after bad. So I'll continue with the new age. So try it out. If you haven't tried it out and you don't like white wines, it's probably not the worst one in the world to try. So give it a try.
All right. Sounds good. So you'll also have to come up with your worst wine too. And tell us what that is.
Oh, that's really hard. That's like really, really hard.
Well, we know it's going to be a white. So
yeah, it will be a white. Yeah, pretty much any Sauvignon Blanc that is drier and shit and has absolutely no flavor.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're going to wind up tonight with a musical selection, and I'm putting this in here because some friends of ours have a band. They've been working really, really hard to put this EP out. They finally did so last Saturday night. We went to the show where they released it. The band is a Springfield, Missouri band. They're called Bad Dog No Biscuit. Their lyrics they're really fun. So if you want to kind of dig in and listen to what they're talking about, you'll probably really enjoy this. It's a hard rock kind of stuff. They are a three piece, and, they're really trying to, motivate themselves upwards in the music world. And they really have, a class EP out. It's six songs, and all of the tracks are over 4 minutes, and some of them are in fact over 6 minutes. So this is not typical of your local band kind of fare. They've actually got some decent lyricism, some decent instrumentation, and they spend time in the writing. They're not just putting out crappy 3 minute long pop tracks. So I enjoyed this really a lot, and I'm going to play the last track six from this, which is called The Devil's Lettuce. So let's listen to The Devil Lettuce by Bad Dog No Biscuit. We'll be right back. was The Devil's Lettuce by Bad Dog No Biscuit. And wanted to really thank Shelby and DJ and Gary for letting us play that on here. And it was really fun to see them and hear that played live when they released the EP last Saturday night. So I believe you can find it on all kinds of places. I know it's on Spotify. I don't know if they've got it on iTunes or Amazon or CD Baby or any of those other places, but I know they have it released somewhere where you can at least buy it electronically. So if you're so inclined, you should definitely pick up it's especially if you like that kind of music, because it's really, really good. The fifth track on the EP is called Swamp Ass, which I didn't really even understand, because anytime they play live, they're always playing in these like juke joints that don't know how to do sound. So I didn't even understand half the words, but now having the album in my hand, I can actually listen to the songs. And I love that song, because whatever you think that term might mean, it's not what they're singing about. So it's a lot of fun, and I would highly encourage you to support, well, local music in our area, at least. I try and support as much local music as I can, and these guys are a lot of fun. So
we've also known Shelby since he was like 16 years old. So
he's a really talented musician, lyricist, songwriter, and guitar player. He plays like every instrument known to man, and most of the stuff that Bad Dog No Biscuit puts out is thanks to him, at least creatively. But DJ is an excellent drummer, and Gary is a fantastic bassist as well. So there you go. All right, I believe we are down to the end of the program. So we're going to...
We're having such a great conversation in the chat room about really bad wines. It's amazing how that topic kind of spawned everybody's nerve.
Everybody has an opinion about things. That's the way it works.
Yeah.
Yep. Opinions are like assholes. Everybody's got one.
Everybody's got
that's
one.
Right. All right, so that's it. We're going to wrap this episode up. This has been episode number 234, weekender number 12 of Linux in the Ham Shack. And we will catch you all on Monday night when we do our long format show. So hopefully go ahead.
Oh, regarding the album, it's available on iTunes, Google Music, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and most any other place you can listen to music.
Well, there you go.
That's what they've posted.
So. And they're Bad Dog No Biscuit, name of the group, and the EP is eponymous, has the same name. So check it out. All right, we're out of here. That's 234. It's a wrap. I'm Russ, K5TUX.
I'm Cheryl, W5MOO.
And I'm Bill, NE4RD73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net/8008/LHS live. Until next time, over and out. Linux in the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.